Hello there, and welcome to the 8th episode of Dev Conversations by Swift Toolkit, where we host developers that contribute to the Swift tooling ecosystem. Today we have Pedro Pineira and Marek Fort, who work on Twist. Hello guys, how are you doing?
Hello, hey, it's great to be here, to be invited to the show.
Of course, Twist was one of the first tools that I started working with when I was working in iOS infrastructure, and it's been a source of inspiration for a few years. So it's a pleasure to have you guys here.
I think at the time it was not that common to write CLIs in Swift. It was very common in other ecosystems. So as soon as we saw the Swift argument parser, we couldn't and we felt all the pain points of S Code projects and S Code. It felt like we had to do something about it. So it's great that when we look back, everything that has happened since.
Yeah, for sure. For people who don't know what Twist is, and maybe you can start by telling the history and how it all started.
So Twist started, I think it was 2017. I was working at the time at SoundCloud. They had a platform team. I think it was called Core. We were focused on making developers productive, so we'll see how they use the tools and if we could do something to help them make their job faster and better. And at the time, it was a modular code base. It was a mix of Objective-C and Swift. And it was obvious that the pain point was maintaining the modularity of the project. You know that modularity means linking, means frameworks, libraries, and that also means build phases, build settings that were not really straightforward. With the graph of the project, it's small, then it's manageable. You can think about it. You can reason about the graph. But if it becomes larger, kind of impossible, and then you change a small thing and suddenly the whole thing doesn't compile. That was one of the pain points. The second one was Git conflicts that were very frequent because of the monolith format. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Which finally S Code 16 is fixing with the synchronized groups, but at the time there wasn't really anything. So we thought, yeah, let's do something. We did what CocoaBots did at the time, which is S Code, the build system and the format, that's not really something that you can change because that's what S Code depends on. You cannot come up with a new format that fixes the issues of, because that would mean taking people away from S Code, which is a crazy idea. The second thing is, if you don't change the format and the tool is what it is, like, what do you do? So we generated projects, which is what CocoaBots ended up doing for solving dependency management. So I think project generation became a tool for solving the challenges or addressing the challenges that people were facing. CocoaBots focused on bringing dependency management into an ecosystem that didn't have it. We focused on complexity of modularization, frequent Git conflicts. So we built a CLI, which I think it was the natural interface, and we did it in Swift because we wanted people to contribute to it. And so doing that in languages like Ruby or JavaScript, I personally liked them, but it didn't make sense. And in retrospective, I think it was a good idea to choose Swift as a language for Twist.
Yes, and you had to write Xcode proj from zero, right? Because CocoaPods had their own Ruby gem Xcode proj, then you had to implement one in Swift to allow Twist to use it.
Exactly. So there wasn't. So what we needed was to write an S Code project. For that, you don't really need a lot. It's as long as you follow the schema, that's all fine. But then, because we needed that tool, we ended up implementing a tool that is not just for writing, but also reading, updating, and writing, like doing the whole thing. And for that, you want to make sure that whenever you write back the project that you end up writing, the diff between the project that you write and the one that you had before is the minimum diff as possible. And this required a lot of like looking at CocoaBots, S Code proj code base, doing reverse engineering of S Code. The process was a bit of like you commit everything to a Git repo, you make some changes in S Code through the UI, and then you see what happens, and then you infer from that. So we build that, then we build Twist, and then Marek joined soon after as a contributor. So maybe Marek, you want to share more about what happened since?
Yeah, I joined relatively recently from the time that the project was started, and I got interested in it because, not necessarily because of the modularization, but we were doing a lot of white labeling of apps, and that was also something that Twist is quite useful at because you can easily define the same structure for different kinds of apps and then just change the strings. At the time, there was no support for support for Swift Package Manager in Xcode, and Twist was not supporting that. I went into an issue and asked if I could contribute. At some point, Pedro came up and said, yeah, sure, go ahead. I'm going to give you some pointers here and there. So I went ahead with the contribution, added support for the Swift Package Manager, and then kind of stayed around. And that's sort of how we generally try to treat a lot of issues, try to nudge people to solve them themselves by giving them pointers. And it's also why picking Swift was a great idea, because it makes it much more approachable for the rest of the community to contribute, because we're in the realm of Xcode projects, so we assume most people write Swift. And so if the code base is in Swift, it's much easier to contribute for people rather than if they had to not only learn the new code base, but also kind of work with a language that they're not really used to working with.
Yeah, that makes sense. I remember I contributed a bit in the past, and I'm sure that as the same way that for me was easier, was I'm sure that many people in the community can contribute. And I think that the numbers prove, right? The numbers prove that this was a great idea. And what do you see as the challenges that you faced in this journey? So we are now in Twist 4, right? You created Twist in around 2018, the first version, first release?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, we've gone through several major versions. I mean, technically, I think it's fine. We tried to like do dog fooding so that we use the tool ourselves, so we felt that pain points that we were motivated to solve. Sometimes they align with the problems that people brought. Other times they were different, but I think that helped. The tool grew. And it grew in terms of features, but also it grew in terms of popularity. And I would say the biggest challenge that we face is sustainability, which is something that you often see open source developers talking about. It's like, okay, now suddenly this thing that was my joy, the thing that I did in my spare time, suddenly becomes, it's taking a lot of my time. So we were starting to see something like that, and we decided to do something about it. I would say that was the biggest challenge and the one that we're focusing on right now. But yeah. I don't know if you want me to share more about that. If so, I will be happy to.
Yeah, sure, of course.
So I think with open source, like, I like to think of them taking typically three paths. One is like, you build something no one knows about you, and it's your toy project, the small thing, something on the side, fine. Whenever you have some time, you just tinker with it. Then there is the, some people's, like, it becomes popular, like, people use it. And then you get to the point where you need to find a way to make yourself, like, psychologically be stable so that you can deal with all this amount of requests, support requests, feature requests, issues, like everything that you get through you, process everything and like basically continue to have your full-time job and on the side have this team, but in a way that it doesn't burn you out. This is very tricky because at the end of the day, if you have your full-time job and on top of that, you have to do all this open source thing on the side. We've seen so many projects that where the maintainer ends up being burned out and then the project
dies.
Yeah,
it easily becomes a burden and the exactly. Overflow of notifications and people opening issues.
Exactly. So there are projects that once they're done, they're done. For example, I think that's if you play with Miss. I would say it's more of in a done state, sure, like you can continue doing more, but it's done. Like there is really nothing else you can. Sure, there are some ideas and some improvements that you can do here and there, but this is different because Xcode projects change all the time. They add new features. People are demanding more, so we cannot really say we're done. We need to do more, and people need more stuff. And sometimes what we end up really doing is not adding features or solving bugs of Twist, but rather helping people with their Xcode project needs or questions. So that wasn't really possible in Twist. So there are some projects that what we do as well is they say, well, listen, like this is what it is. I cannot do more. And then the project kind of stagnates. You don't really see anything happening in them.
But how did you handle before? You now established the company for a while already, right? For around a year.
So we decided to take the path of building.
But before that, how did you handle all this?
Like having the privilege of having the extra time to devote to it. I think that's a privilege that some people have because of, I don't know, the phase in life. I had that. I think Matic had similar freedom as well. And then you can allow yourself to devote that extra time to the project. But because life goes on and then you have other priorities, either you do something or so we were starting to feel that way. It's like a lot of the project was demanding a lot of energy, which we didn't have. So there was this inflection point of we really need to do something about it.
But at the same time, you created a group of core maintainers, right? So I assume this helped a ton.
It does, but at the end of the day, like, you kind of distribute the load, and then instead of just being one person like steering the project, it's multiple people, so you share the load a bit. But at the end of the day, it's really not enough, because maintaining a group is also time and energy that you need to put into it. It's not just that you can make yourself fully indispensable. So it wasn't really, it helped, but it wasn't enough. Like, you still need, we needed a lot of time into the project to keep basically satisfying the demands of the people, of the users of the tool.
There's only so much you can distribute across the core group. Also, the core group, like, time availability changes over time. And as you have more users, then you still need to end up kind of having those PRs reviewed by just a couple of people, because otherwise the quality of the code suffers. If it's just randomly reviewed by people here and there, you just click accept. You need like sort of like a strong group who are active in the project to be reviewing these people, these PRs, so they can actually steer the project well. So as the project becomes popular, you can really just grow the core group with more people. You need kind of to have like a thinner set of people who are kind of more active, and kind of that doesn't usually work in open source. Exactly. And that doesn't really work for really long, like for long term. At least it didn't work for us. Or, I mean, we could have just kept going as an only open source project in our free time, but probably either of us could have dropped out, and then maybe somebody would have picked up the slack. But it always is tricky in these projects to then kind of keep the quality of the contributions right and kind of keep the project going for a long time. That's when usually things become a bit more complicated.
And what other learnings did you have since starting Twist, especially in, I don't know, maybe in the iOS world, macOS, and we had new platforms launched since then? What were interesting bits you can share?
Aside from the part of like how to make this whole thing sustainable, I think the tooling is not really that extensible, which forces you to find creative ways of solving problems. We did project generation, but there were a bunch of others that we solved after that also required a bit of like being creative about how to use the foundations that Apple gives you. One example is when we introduced binary caching, we ended up using project generation combined with the idea of XC frameworks to transform your graph into something that it compiles faster because you skip compilation steps. Matic recently worked on the Twist registry, which mirrors the Swift package index to provide a faster resolution and also faster caching, because the directory that you get in your system is more lightweight. So that builds on some interface that Apple built. I don't know if they designed that with that goal, but we found it was possible to solve this particular problem. So we would love to see like tools being more extensible. We understand with so many developers and so many needs out there that you cannot really cater your tools to the needs of every company. But if you make your things extensible enough, then you allow people to extend and solve their problems. And even though there is some extensibility here and there, it's very limiting. Like script build phase is really not enough. The build tool plugin that you find in SPM is not really enough. So you find these things and it's super annoying because you would like to extend using existing APIs instead of hacking the tools. And that's what we often found ourselves doing.
Yeah, I would extend that by saying when things are not extensible, but you still really want to achieve something like project generation, and then, for example, the extra features like binary caching, you end up sort of forking the ecosystem, and that is super, super costly. Like, once you sort of deviate from what everybody's doing, then you get into the cycle of every time Apple does something, you have to update your abstraction on top of that. And that's where a lot of the maintenance in some of the Twist features comes in. Not only the project generation itself, but we also have a custom integration of some Swift packages. And we did that because that was the only way how we can turn the Swift packages into XE frameworks so that we can cache them as binaries. And that's even more costly at this point probably than Xcode itself, because Swift Package Manager and the way it's integrated in Xcode, there's a lot of things, convenience things or sort of things that are not explicitly declared, and then you sort of have to do a lot of reverse engineering. And I think Swift Package Manager right now is in a bit more of a fluid state than Xcode, so that's probably now a really big bulk of like maintenance work, and that's where we forked the ecosystem. I think we did that for a good reason, but if at any point we can kind of go back and kind of align with the rest of the ecosystem, if Apple makes sort of Swift Package Manager and the way how it's integrated is Xcode extensible, we would much rather do that and have this sort of fork. And again, any of these forks are super, super expensive to maintain.
Yeah, and another issue is that they're not always clear about where it's going, right? It's, although it's open source, it's not, it doesn't behave as an open source project. So
you see hints of what's happening here and there. So the more open they are, the more we can kind of see where things are headed. For example, they announced Swift Build more than a month ago, and then everyone got super excited about the idea of having this Swift Build, and everyone was wondering, like, what does it mean? No, like, there's the stability part of it. Like, now it's a unified build system across SPM and tools, so that is positive. So what you feel with those changes are the transitive effects of it, which is reliability in the tools. The second piece to it, which is what we have been looking into, is this whole caching at a lower level. So instead of us having to reinvent caching, they just grab ideas from other ecosystems and they're building something into a lower layer. So strategically, what we are doing a lot of lately is, instead of, sometimes you need to basically fork the ecosystem. We did that with project generation and a bunch of other things, but we fork continuing to look at what Apple is doing, so that as soon as they are done with their thing, we plug ourselves into their project and think about where we can bring value. For example, eventually caching is going to be solved by a build system. It requires a lot of years, because first you need things to be explicit. So they're pushing everyone to explicit modules. If you're not using them, use them. Second, they're evolving the build system so that it has the concept of caching builds into it. But that requires a server. So how can we build the best server? How can we bring value through a server? So this is how we're thinking about. Ideally, Twist is more something that you plug into an extensible tool chain, and we fill the gaps that Apple is not filling, instead of having to fork anything. Fork is necessary. Forks sometimes basically nudge Apple or like the industry to basically say, hey, this is possible if we evolve the tools. And eventually those evolutions happen at lower levels. And I think, yeah, they will continue to happen. We saw that with Git conflicts. Like, they're less frequent now with synchronized groups in Xcode 16. Complexity of linking and modularization, I don't really know. I think it's still a pain point. That's why a lot of people use SPM as a project manager tool. Will they solve it at some point with something else other than build phases? Maybe, or SPM becomes the thing. But this is, we're keeping an eye on all these things and thinking about what also what that means also for Twist, for the business, the company, and everything.
That's really great. And you mentioned some of the tools that you had to create. You've been also maintaining other packages focused on tooling, right? How do you see tooling nowadays compared to where it was a few years ago?
I mean, I think you can clearly tell there is a strong focus on Swift being used in Apple platforms, like iOS, macOS, for building apps. There is more happening for Swift being used elsewhere, like embedded platforms, also like CLIs to Swift on the server. Because of that, you see the community building packages and filling gaps, still far behind from other ecosystems, I have to say. And we're trying to contribute whatever we can in the context of CLIs, for example. There were some tools given by Apple. The Swift Argument Parser, I think, is amazing. There was at the time the Swift Tools Support or something like that, I think it was called. And then they deprecated at some point. We don't really know why. Yep. But Absolute Path and Relative Path from that package was super useful. We would love to see them also filling the gap of like running child processes, which, sure, you have this process utility from foundation, but if you look at the APIs, like compare that to other languages, it's so old. Like, they need to.
Yeah, and I covered it a few months ago in the blog about command, right? Which is very useful, and it has support for async await and handles possible race conditions.
Exactly. So we are seeing where the opportunities are for filling gaps. We fill them. We are doing that now, for example, with this design system called Nora. We put too much focus on the business logic of the CLI, but the CLI, like any app, also has an interface. The difference between a UI and like the interface of a CLI is that in the terminal is just text, and you're limited. You have color, spaces, text, and underline, and like maybe a couple of extra things, but you can also design that. So we're thinking about how to design the output of Twist to be useful. How do we package this in a way that anyone can use it to build their own CLIs.
In
so
their
we
own are, tools.
Exactly. So we like to think of ourselves as an open source company. And what that means is we do as much as we can open source. We contribute these packages to the community because I think that's how you move the ecosystem forward. You kind of lift the things that developers need. So instead of someone thinking about the UI of their CLI, they just plug our package and use it. So we're building a company so that we can do more of that. And I think if you look at the packages that we've been releasing in the past months or years, like it's kind of a reflection of that strategy that we were following.
Yes, that's really great to have this option that you also use in your own tools. And whenever you see something is ready and can be packaged, then you just ship to everyone and everyone can use it.
I would add also that sometimes we have an idea for something that we would like to build and it's clear we build it. Like I think the design system is an example of that. And there are other cases where we see that something that we build inside Twist could be a commodity that's useful for the community and then we extract it. And it's amazing to see that once you extract it and make it, not make it open source because it was open source, but like you package it in a way that you can easily plug it into your project. Then it's amazing to see what people are able to build with that. An example of that was internally Twist has this, it's called Xcode Graph. So we have an in-memory representation of your project graph. We extracted it and we made like changes backward compatible. We had a release process, change log, release notes, everything that comes with like packaging your thing as an independent piece of open source. And then there was this developer, Andy, he showed up and then suddenly he built this graph visualizer, a very interactive visualizer.
In the browser, right? It opens in the browser.
In the browser, exactly. And then the next day was like, if you have this kind of set of data structures to represent your project, what if I build a tool that basically converts your Xcode project into this in-memory representation, and then I pass that into this other tool. So suddenly you have a data structure that is a standard, that is always backward compatible. So you can always build stuff on top of it that nothing is going to break. Then that allows to build tools on top of it. The graph visualizer is one of them, but you can implement link rules. You can implement all sorts of things. This is all independent from Twist. Twist uses it internally. It was initially a Twist thing, and we extracted it. So
but
now it becomes
now it's not anymore.
Exactly. Now it's a commodity
for
the industry.
And it can also work. And another PR that was merged recently was that you can use this even in generic old school Xcode projects.
Yeah, this goes back to us sort of going back and aligning with the ecosystem. So now we can, some of the Twist features don't require you to generate your projects, but sort of, again, aligning with the ecosystem. So now some of the features like Twist Graph are also useful for projects that are kind of using the standard Xcode projects or even Xcode projects with local packages for managing your projects. Again, that was like completely open source contribution from a person who was just very excited about the idea. And that wouldn't have happened if we didn't put that as a sort of commodity and kind of told people this is now something that you can use. And this is now also something that you can modify and kind of contribute back to.
Yeah. And I was going to ask about future plans of Twist and where you're headed. And I think that this already answers a little bit, right? You are trying to expand to the broader iOS Xcode macOS community that doesn't use Twist already, right? What else is in sight for you?
So we would like to basically solve problems that are related to productivity. How do you make sure that your developers are doing their job, the best job they can, faster? How do we do this in a way such that you can adopt these tools without having to do a lot of changes in your projects and in your tools? So I think this Xcode Graph tool plays a role in enabling this vision that suddenly allows anyone to access this, no? But once you access it, if I was talking about sustainability before, imagine if suddenly on top of all the users that you have, you bring thousands of more users, then sustainability will become even more problematic. So we are thinking about where are we going to bring value and how do we monetize on that value? That's what the end businesses are all about. So we think we'll continue to build these client-side commodities and packages and libraries so that anyone can build their own tools, even their own services if they want to, because I think that's how you basically make the whole thing tooling ecosystem accessible. And then we're going to bring value through a server and capture value there. And by capturing value, I mean paying for a service so that we can continue doing this as a full-time thing. What a server brings, a database, so you can store things over time. A server also brings an API that you can talk to, not with your own server, but also with other servers. You can listen to webhooks. And the third element is you can have a background job system. With these three pieces in place, suddenly you have access to solving problems with solutions that it wouldn't be possible without a server. So we are thinking about, okay, we have all these client-side tools, we have an understanding of ESCO projects, we have an understanding of the completion of a build, the test results and everything. If we push that to a server, how can we leverage all that information to provide tools to help people be more productive? So we're building some kind of tool chain, something that is very common in other ecosystems. On the web, you find platforms like Vercel, Netlify, on React Native, you find Expo. It's like this integrated tool chain so that I focus on building. I open ESCO, I build my app, and everything else is kind of taken care of. Analytics, optimization of builds, optimization of tests. So we're building this kind of tool chain that you plug into your day-to-day development, and you focus on what matters to you, which is building the best apps that you can. And we optimize and make sure that you do that job well. That's how we're seeing the future of the platform.
Very nice. And then each person, each developer can bring the pieces they want, and right?
Exactly. So we'll continue to put commodities out there. People can build their own tools that are fully independent from Twist. I think this model is kind of similar to Docker in a way. So Docker started as a CLI. They develop a virtualization technology, which is called BuildKit, that was eventually extracted as a commodity from Docker. So you can use it. You can build your own virtualization CLI if you want to. And then Docker required, with so many people using it, it required some kind of business on top of it. So they brought the server component to it. And Docker is not just the CLI. It's a combination of a registry with the images and the CLI all together is a product. And then there are some elements that are commodities built by the Docker team. So it's kind of the same thing. Twist is no longer just a CLI. It's a combination of a server and a CLI. The CLI is just one of the interfaces to the server, but there is also the dashboard, which you access through the web. Maybe in the future, we build more native apps for different things. And then in the process of building this whole thing, some of the commodities that we think will be useful to advance the ecosystem, we extract them and make them open source because we think everyone benefits from this thing, us and also everyone. So that's how we approach open source.
Yes. I'm looking forward to see this becoming a reality, and I'm really, really excited to see the community making use of it. I think I can wrap it here. If people want to find out more about Twist, about what you, the content you write, you also have the blog, right? Where they can find you both.
Yeah, website is the primary place to go to if you want to learn more about Twist. Then from the website, you can head to other resources that we have, like the documentation. We have a pretty active forum. Or of course, GitHub is always there as well.
Yeah, so you have the forums. There's also the Twist Slack.
Yep.
So we'll leave socials in the show notes. Thank you so much for joining, for our insights. I'm really proud of having taken a little part on the history of Twist and seeing how much it grew and where it's headed to. So I wish you both a lot of success and good luck in the continuation of this journey.
Thank you. And thanks for contributing, you and everyone that also took part in this.
Yeah, and thanks for inviting us.
Of course. See you in the next one. Bye-bye.